Enjoying a typical Kabul childhood. He's been injured by a suicide bomb.
Just got back to get lamps. It's a huge explosion. Dust fills up blood. And there were two bodies lying dead on the soil just there, about 10 yards away from him.
He told me his father and brother were severely injured, but they were alive.
Jadala says the explosion was actually aimed at an international convoy which was passing by, but of course, the victims were already
The guides were nervous. They spotted men talking on mobile phones, and the crowd was pulling away fast. They heard me make the drive to the second suicide.
Josha is in enormous pain, but he says that he and his friends and his relatives, they all go in daily fear of being killed or maimed or hurt in a suicide bomb.
Everyone watches what they say and who they talk to.
Soberingly, he says that the terrorists, the people who let off the suicide bombs, who planned them, they live and mingle with the ordinary people of Kabul.
Asked to go and turn off into this compound here we've just been passing. I think that's where we're going. And explain ourselves.
They're gonna ask us what because of the camera. They say that we were filming.
We've just been told to take the camera away.
This would be the first of two occasions when I was forced to spend time with the US military. On the second occasion, they wiped our tape.
We've just been searched and interrogated by US soldiers just for driving past their base in the city center. It shows how on edge these guys really are.
If you're a taxi driver, you have to navigate between the Afghan security forces, the Taliban, and the Americans. Mohammed Hussein offered me a guided tour.
I'm
Afghanistan's many past wars, takes home just $5 a day.
Hussein's just told me that he spends about 3 hours a day being searched or stopped at checkpoints, and that more or less halves his salary.
He explained the Taliban often accuse people who leave Kabul of spying. He doesn't take passengers beyond the city limits.
He's a prisoner in his own city. He tries to drive out of Kabul, he'll be stopped by the Taliban, and he'll be killed.
There's one profession that is forced to leave the city limits. Just arrived at the lorry depot in the South Alaska Skidmore.
Says that his job is so dangerous that in the last year alone, some 7 close friends of his who were truck drivers were killed, and he knows of approximately 30 others as well.
Faisal told me most of the attacks start 25 miles south of Kabul at a town called Maidan Shah.
Furthermore, they're getting more and more frequent in recent months. Faisal says that if we go much further down that road, we ourselves will become at risk from criminals and Taliban.
Faisal revealed that he also fears the police.
What do the police want when they stop you?
He told me that at every police checkpoint on the road, he has to pay a bribe. And he made a further allegation.
After dark, the police will come out and actually conduct the armed robberies themselves.
It wasn't the first time I'd heard allegations against the police. Many people in Kabul believe the police are linked to powerful criminal gangs who operate with near impunity. Their speciality is kidnapping. A well-known doctor wanted to tell me about his experiences. He was held and tortured for 3 weeks until his family and friends made $150,000.
And did you have security like this before the kidnapping?
Never. I never had security before. I never used any gun before. So it's here. So I have to carry it when I go outside.
Dr. Wahaj was snatched by men who claimed to be intelligence officers. They shackled him in a basement.
They start beating on my back. They had some cables, some wooden things, with kicks, with box, with all these things. So they beat me maybe for 1 hour or 1.5 hours. And after that, they connect to my brother. They said, okay, now tell your brother, arrange money. I said to my brother, okay, brother, arrange, because they are going to kill me.
Dr. Wahaj is a famous doctor treating top politicians and senior policemen. Yet no policeman took any interest in his case while he was being held or afterwards. He draws the obvious conclusion.
I want some people who will bring security to Afghanistan, who should stop corruption, who should stop criminals. But this present government, they supported the corruption, they supported the criminals, and people, they are not feeling safe.
So you believe that there was police and government involvement somewhere?
In some way, they have got connections, relations, and support. The people who are in the government, definitely they are involved.
How often does kidnapping happen in Afghanistan?
Everyone knows that every day or every hour, somebody is kidnapped in Afghanistan.
Was life better under the Taliban before 2001 or now today?
Yeah, life was much better. Security was 100% in Kabul at the time of Taliban.
The government disagreed. And the patches of Kabul, big batches of Chalk in prison. Hundreds of Taliban and Al Qaeda suspects are held here. We've been given permission to visit because the authorities are keen to show they're combating the kidnapping of Delhi. We were taken to an inner courtyard.
Just arrived in Chalk in prison, and they're not letting us from anywhere apart from where we are now, because they tell us they're too ashamed to show us the conditions in the rest of the jail.
The kidnapper was produced. Janaga told me he expected an 18-year sentence. Under torture, he'd already confessed.
Janaga says that he was a driver of the Ministry of Commerce. He helped in the kidnap of a significant political figure here in Kabul. The figure was held by the kidnappers for 5 days, and then the police intervened and seized the kidnappers.
He was a minor player in a much larger organization of which he knew little.
The only way he could raise money to pay off his debts was to betray the people he worked for and sell them effectively to kidnappers.
The imam of one of Kabul's most well-attended mosques confirmed to me how deeply kidnapping affects ordinary life. Abdul Rauf has lived under many different kinds of regime in Kabul.
The imam says that he's lived through the Russians being here and they did terrible things. He's lived through the Mujahideen and they did terrible things. But things have never been so bad as they are now.
He told me 6 worshippers at his mosque had been kidnapped the day before.
Things were much safer, he says, under the Taliban than under the current government.
Regime change. The strategy seems to be working. The target that morning had been a petrol station. A police officer tells us a car bomb went off at 7 a.m. this morning and 2 people were injured.
The officer says there was no question that the perpetrators of this atrocity were the enemies of Afghanistan.
Attacks like this reinforce the message that the Taliban are active in the heart of Kabul.
He acknowledged they're getting closer to the heart of the city, but he said that security forces were cracking down on them and were going to build a safe Afghanistan.
It's a Taliban bomb, but foreigners get the blame. Passers-by began to abuse us.
You're American.
Our guides are very eager now that we should go off. We're causing resentment, and there's always a threat of a second strike.
Bombs aren't the only weapon the Taliban have. The failing economy provides the perfect environment for their insurgency. Everywhere I saw men looking for jobs. Unemployment has reached 20%. The men were clearly angry.
Abdullah's told me that he hasn't been able to find any work as a carpenter for the last 2 months. And yet he's got to pay the best part of $200 a month rent for his home and feed his 10 children. He's desperate.
Western reconstruction projects don't provide these men with work.
Marouf, as well as many other workers here, are blaming foreign workers being brought in by private companies in order to take away their jobs.
Economic despair is the best recruiting sergeant the Taliban could hope for.
And if they can't get jobs, they're turning to thievery, violence and kidnapping.
With the men unable to find work, they are forced to send their wives and children begging on the streets. Local charities estimate there are now 60,000 beggars on the streets, mostly women and children. The numbers have nearly doubled in 3 years.
What is life like for you in Kabul?
She was ashamed of having to beg.
She's now breaking down in tears. The economy is so bad, she says, that the only way she can feed her family is by going out and begging. And she earns, on an average day, a pathetic 100 afs. That's about $2.
I saw a young girl begging on her own.
How much money have you made?
She'd made about 7 pence.
And what are you going to do with that money?
She was going to give it to her mother.
I've just seen this young girl begging on the street. She tells me she's called Salama and that she's 7 years old, that she's got 9 brothers and sisters, and they all beg too. And they have to beg because their parents haven't got any money.
Salama agreed to take me to her home.
We finally reached the house. I suggested we say this is a very, very poor area of Kabul.
Salama's parents and their 10 children live in one room.
Yes.
Her father was out collecting rubbish to use as fuel. Begging was the only way they could survive.
Salama's mother says that things are desperate. She's had nothing to eat today at all, apart from a cup of tea, and the same true of the other children. Do you feel guilty about sending them out to beg?
She said she felt very guilty.
Salama's mother said, of course she doesn't want to send them out to beg, but she has no choice. There's no other way of making ends meet. And between them all, they make no more than 60 afs. That's barely a dollar.
She said that life was much better under the Taliban. Her husband had a job then.
This very sad story tells us what a desperate state the economy is in Kabul. All the children sent out to beg, no money to send them to school or buy them food.
While some wait for the Taliban with hope, there are others who fear and fear. This is an institution the Taliban have vowed to destroy. It's a girls' school. Zania said the security situation was getting worse by the day.
She cites that kidnapping is getting worse, and she says that girls are now getting raped from the age of 12. So you have fear for women's rights here in Kabul.
She felt that in a city waiting for the Taliban, women already had very few defenders.
Sadia says there's no one to protect women in Kabul. If a woman gets attacked, there's no one to stand up for her rights.
Rihanna is saying that the great threat to her future is the Taliban. In southern Afghanistan, they throw acid in girls' faces just for going to school. She's afraid that they're gaining strength in Kabul too. All the girls felt threatened.
Farah has just said something really alarming. The security situation is so bad and the threat of suicide bombing so grave that many parents are reluctant to allow their daughters to go out of the house. That means they can't go to school, can't have careers. Do you sense that there is growing support for the Taliban here in Kabul?
Farah insisted support for the Taliban is getting stronger here in Kabul. Certainly among ordinary people, but also among politicians.
And that means that women who took the burqa off back in 2001 when the Taliban was defeated are now beginning to put the burqa back on.
The day the people of Kabul
باشه یک فریمانی باشه در افغانستان ما انفجاری زیاد
هارون is telling me that in the new year he is hoping for an end to the fighting, an end to the suicide bombing, an end to prices going up and peace for everybody. Several victims of kidnap, and some of them say that the police are implicated in the kidnap racket. Is that true? Abdul Rahman had only been in the job a month. He explained why some people might have got the wrong impression. The commander says that the police are not involved in the kidnap racket, but he does say that some of the kidnappers used police vehicles and police uniforms in order to kidnap their victims. I put it to the commander that people in Kabul face police corruption every day of their lives. The commander accepts that there is some corruption in the police, but he says they're cracking down on it as much as possible, and he points out that corruption happens in other countries besides Afghanistan. The commander was keen to add that they are fighting terrorism 24 hours a day, and he cited the arrest of six suspects from the suicide bomb that we visited on the Kandahar Road. This is another familiar eruption for the people of Kabul. If I go to the hospital, I'm going to go to the hospital. I'm going to go to the hospital. Cemetery. I spoke with Mustafa's uncle.
Tell me about Mustafa.
He was grieving for his nephew, but his concerns were with the living.
Now that Mustafa is dead, there will be no one to look after his mother and his four sisters, to feed them, to clothe them, and to keep them in a house.
The mourners told me they were praying to God for a government that could provide them with better security. Otherwise, they could not survive.
Mohammed Sayed Mustafa wasn't a terrorist, he wasn't a policeman, he wasn't a soldier. He was just a car mechanic in the latest in a long list of innocent victims of the siege of Kabul. It was the Taliban who murdered Mustafa as they killed countless others. But many people in Kabul are starting to believe that only the Taliban can offer security.